It's Friday! Yes.
And it really is Friday. We always record these podcasts on Friday. My name is Alan O'Donoghue. You may know me as Techno Teacher, T-E-K-N-O Teacher. And, in fact, I wonder if you didn't say who you were, whether people would know. I'm sat next to somebody and I'm at the Bet Show. Give me a few clues that the listeners, the people at home who can't see you, can try and work out who you are. Tell us one clue.
I have a YouTube channel.
Yeah, but so does Justin Bieber, you know? You're female, so you're not Justin Bieber.
That was going to be my next one. You just stole
okay.
It. I'm female. I used to be a teacher.
Used to be a teacher. So you work for somebody else?
So I work for someone, yeah.
Somebody or something?
Something.
Like a charitable foundation?
Yeah, like a charitable foundation that you are associated with in
some way. Yeah. You've guessed. Do you know, the microphone's at the other end, so I just realised. So this is going to be really quiet, and now it's just suddenly gone very loud. And that's kind of what happens when you do a live podcast and it goes out and all the rest. So
always the professional.
Yeah. So who are you and what do you do?
My name is Carrie-Anne Philbin. I now work for the Raspberry Pi Foundation as the education pioneer. And what that means is hopefully I will help produce more teaching materials so people can use Raspberry Pi in the classroom, at primary and secondary, and it ticks all the boxes for the new programme of study and all that kind of stuff.
That sounds like an amazing challenge. It's pretty
tough.
But it also sounds like something that could potentially be very, very exciting as well.
Yeah, for me it's really exciting because that's what I enjoy. I enjoy being creative and I enjoy, you know, finding innovative ways to use technology. And you know, with a new computing curriculum, everyone keeps saying, oh, it's not creative and it's not this and it's not that. And actually, we know, you know, I know, all the people who listen to your podcast know and are passionate about their subject. No, it is really creative and it's finding fun ways to teach it, putting those materials out there that are free, you know, that teachers can take for free and try them. And if they don't like them, they can say on the website, don't really like this one. But maybe they find one they do like and they can, you know, mark that one up and say, yeah, I really like that one. And we can produce more. And
so one thing that's always appealed to me about the video YouTube channel that you do, I was trying to not mention the name, Geek Girl Diaries.
Why?
No, because I wanted to say blah, 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 Geek Girl Diaries.
Oh, I see.
Without saying what it was. One thing that I've always thought that's really cheeky, catchy, in a nice way.
Yeah, fun, just of like, oh, have a go at this.
And however many words I can think of with C, but creative and cheeky and catchy as well. And it's like you've developed like another persona when you present these. Like, hey, you know, I'm a geek, but it's cool to be a geek. And
yeah, I kind of hope it is my persona. I like to think it's me when I was 14.
Great.
Maybe, like even me now, looking back. But yeah, I guess, I hope it's not a different persona. I like to think it is me. But obviously when you're doing something that like a YouTube channel, you've got to have videos that are catchy, are quick, you know, so
it's going to be entertaining, so people are going to stay and watch them.
It's a little bit different from teaching, isn't
Absolutely,
it?
Absolutely, you know? Now, I do training courses with teachers, and I meet loads of them who say, I don't get it, the Raspberry Pi, it's just a circuit board. Have you got the same response from people as well?
Yeah, it's been really interesting at BET over the last few days. People have come up and said, right, what's this Raspberry Pi thing all about? And you're like, what do you mean? You know, are you asking how can you teach with it, or what do you want to know? And when you start talking about physical computing and how accessible that is with the Raspberry Pi, they suddenly start being very interesting. And if you start talking about cross-curricular activities using it, you start talking about, you know, sending it up to space and all that kind of stuff, they get very, very excited. And then we show them Minecraft Pi, and that blows them away.
The potential that it has. Do you think, though, that there's an expectation that somebody's going to pick a Raspberry Pi up and straight away they're going to have to be able to learn loads of stuff about Linux and bash shells and right? Do you think that's part of a barrier to people?
Yeah, I think some people have a little bit of a fear factor.
Yeah.
Some teachers, when they even look at the program of study, it has words like algorithms and data. They get a little bit frightened, and maybe that word Linux does frighten people. But we both know how easy it is to use a Raspberry Pi. The Noobs operating system is very easy to install. Great thing about SD cards, you know, mess up one of them, you can wipe it, start it again, or just plug in another one. So that makes it a really great tool as well. So I think those barriers are dropping.
Of course, we could say that the team behind the development of the Raspberry Pi missed a trick, really, because what they should have done was they should have attached a screen to it, and maybe rather than have a keyboard, like a button that you just press that does everything, and like make it really shiny and sleek? Should they not have done something like
well,
that?
Well, I think other fruit-based companies right. might try something like that. But, you know, we like grassroots. We like kids seeing what's a computer actually is and getting them to ask questions. Because as soon as you put a Raspberry Pi on the desk, that's what they do. They ask questions.
So are you inferring that those people who think that the Raspberry Pi should be really easy haven't really grasped what it's all about?
I do, yeah. I do think that. Yeah.
But one of the fantastic things about it is it's essentially a little brain. It's an engine that you can use to power all sorts of different things. And the book that you've recently had published is just full of fantastic ideas with lots of scope for creativity.
Yeah, when I was approached to write a book, you know, they asked me to write a scratch book, and I thought, well, right. Scratch is just one aspect of Raspberry Pi. I mean, you can download Scratch and use that on a computer. And what interests me was getting people started with all the fantastic different things you can do with a Raspberry Pi. Just getting them started, just introducing them a little bit to what you can do. And I think that's why it's been so successful so far. I think it's the first book to sort of really open people's eyes to what's possible.
I imagine one question you get asked a lot is, what's the best project from the book? Or what's your favourite one? Or what's the best one to start with?
Yeah.
Or...
So I don't know what the best one to start with is, but my favourite one is there's like a little marshmallow game that I made in Scratch, really simple one, that if you click the marshmallow lots of times in 10 seconds, you know, you work out how many points you get. And with the GPIO pins on the Raspberry Pi, you can attach some jumper cables, shove them straight into a marshmallow, and that marshmallow can become a button. So actually you hit the marshmallow and it, you know, scores in the game. And that's, for me, that's just fun and exciting.
Which is exactly what you're saying, the physical computing aspects. Now, earlier in the year, when I invited you to come to the Raspberry Jamboree in Manchester, the international convention that we have for teachers from all over the world to come discover the potential of the Raspberry Pi, that sounds like a plug, doesn't it?
It does a little bit.
I was so pleased and delighted that you said you'd be able to come along.
Oh, thank you. Can't wait.
Great, yeah. Because it's trying to help people unlock the potential of what you can do with the Raspberry Pi, to show those amazing projects where you can launch it into the sky, but at the same time say, look, if you've never used a Raspberry Pi before, here's how you can start.
Yeah, the great thing about Raspberry Pi, about our audience, is you've got people who are learners, so you might have teenagers who've come to it themselves and want to learn a bit more. You've got people who are just enthusiasts because they're from that field, they really understand and get Pi. And then you've got teachers, and you've got parents as well who want to get their kids coding. And I think the Raspberry Jamboree caters for all those audiences, which is what makes it such a fantastic event.
Well, we talk about catering for all audiences. There's a large number of people who listen to this podcast who think they have to be an expert, and they're kind of feeling really daunted by the whole prospect of this, like, oh gosh, I'm going to have to do this, I'm going to have to do the other, this is all like totally new to me. You've been at the Bet Show now for 4 days, because this is Friday.
Yeah, it's Friday.
While you've been here, are they the kind of impressions that you've had from people? Are the people like avoiding the stand because they think, oh, that's that horrible thing, I'm going to...
Well, that's a really interesting question, actually, because... you know, Gove at the beginning of the Bet Show said that computing's coming and it's this great thing. And then we had a lot of reporters saying, well, you know, it's a big challenge, isn't it? Because teachers are afraid. And actually the response I've had from people coming to the stand is that they're intrigued, they're interested. Well, what's that? And when we talk about just having a go, they okay, I can have a go. I can learn with the students. Oh, all right then. And there are these great things called Raspberry Jams and I can learn through that. And code clubs and whatever else is going on, and actually they're starting to really open their minds to it. And what the media are not aware of is that actually there's a fantastic community of teachers like yourself who share good practice, who share what they're doing. And I think there's this really wonderful crowdsourced kind of computing that's taking off, not just with Raspberry Pi but generally, and that's what people don't understand. Teachers are very resilient. And
perhaps one of the reassuring things is, I don't think you have a degree in computer science, do you?
I do not. No,
and neither
do
I. I was saying to Rory Kathleen Jones that it's redefined. Having to teach computing has actually redefined me as a teacher. I kind of feel like I've been reborn, and it's just such a more fulfilling and enjoyable subject now, because we're having to teach things like problem solving, encouraging children to become more independent and resilient. But that didn't happen overnight for me. I wish I could have just clicked my fingers. There was a lot of hard work went into it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
but with any challenge, the rewards are...
The rewards are huge. Yeah. I think if every teacher just gave 15 minutes, instead of going, perhaps watching, I don't know, your favourite TV programme, just once a week, just 15 minutes, have a go of a Raspberry Pi, and over a number of weeks, you know, your skills will be improved.
Like Pai Chi, almost.
Just made that up then. Pai Chi.
There's going to be a project named after that, unless somebody's done it already. Because Tai Chi is like the daily exercise to do to get your mental health, well-being, all where you want to be. But your Pai Chi is going to be the thing that's... Yeah. I think I'm onto something here. You heard it here first. So it sounds like you're at the cusp of a really exciting future, all based around the Raspberry Pi.
Yeah, very scary, you know. Yeah.
A lot of responsibility as well,
yeah,
isn't there?
Lots, yeah, thanks for that. Yeah.
You've got to make it work, you know. You've got to persuade teachers that this is possible.
I think when we just use case studies, you know, I've used Raspberry Pi in my classroom, I've created schemes of work based on using it, and it's been successful, and I can tell by the students' response, everything we've done has been pushed by the students. I think that's what makes it exciting, and I know it will work because of that.
And while I've been watching your sort of journey to success, one of the things, in terms of, you know, you've got a book published, and you're working for the foundation now, and all this kind of stuff, so it has been a success. One of the things I've enjoyed watching in your journey is how you haven't just done this on your own. You've had a lot of support from people who are not teachers, but who are very, very keen to... They have a vested interest in seeing this happen. And I'm not thinking like, oh, hang on, I'll work with Carry On, it's going to make me a fortune. But actually giving up their time to support this, like Sam...
Yeah, Sam Aaron from people at Cambridge University, academics who have come and helped and said, write what you want. And they've helped code environments for students to work with, listening to what teachers have to say, and that's very important. At the foundation, our education team has grown. It's 50% ex-teachers, in me and Clive, but we've also got Dave and Ben who aren't teachers, but they're bringing their expertise from industry, and we can create resources, because it takes all those areas,
it
academics,
yeah,
industry experts, teachers together to create a new curriculum.
It was a lovely moment yesterday, and I came and watched, and Laura, who's at Code Boom on Twitter. Fantastic seeing her so excited, people watching. She was demonstrating like concatenation, which is quite a complicated concept to get across. And she was doing it, talking about superheroes.
Yeah.
It's just so much fun can be had out
she
of all this.
She had that audience in the cusp of her hand. She really did. Yeah. Like, I was just astounded. She must just be the most amazing teacher ever. And she's a CAS master teacher like you.
Yeah.
So she's offering training for people, and she's doing it in such a creative and interesting way, and breaking down very difficult concepts in a nice way for people to understand.
Right. Before we close this interview, a couple of things you can mention where people can follow you, find out, read the blog.
Okay. Obviously, Geek Girl Diaries is a YouTube channel. So
and it's spelled G-U-R-L.
It is, just because I couldn't get girl. So there's a Twitter account, or there's a website, geekgirldiaries.co.uk. You can find all the information there. And me, I'm at Miss Philbin. There's lots of links to me. If you just Google Carrie Ann Philbin, the first 7 pages seem to be me, because I have an obscure name.
And there's the book with the...
book Adventures in Raspberry Pi, which is available obviously today because it's Friday. I did a book signing, which was very successful.
and you had the right kind of pen as well.
Someone gave me a pen, that's very nice.
And there's things as well online, like there's the Sonic Pi teaching resources, they're available for free downloads as well.
Coming soon is a new website for Raspberry Pi, and there will be teaching
materials.
Is that
official? Has that been officially announced?
It hasn't been officially announced, but we're allowed to say something is coming. And there are teacher materials. There will be teacher materials on there when it is launched.
And I'm sure if other teachers had issues or concerns, suggestions, you'd be happy to receive those over Twitter, email,
that kind of
thing. To find out.
You know, I'm from that background. I still consider myself to be an educator. Talking to teachers is the most important thing.
Carry On Philbin, thank you very much. I'm really looking forward to the Jamboree in Manchester.
Me too.
And enjoy the show tomorrow, Saturday, the last
Saturday,
day.
Last day.
Yeah.
Take
thank
care.
You. Teleporting, teleporting, teleporting. Shh. Bam. Oh, yeah. I'm back in Preston. I'm not a bet anymore. And it's still Friday.
It's amazing that it's still Friday.
That's the great advantage of teleporting, you see. You can go to wherever you need to at whatever time and all that kind of stuff. So, it's Alan O'Donoghue and...
Vicky Dodd.
Okay, and we're going to talk about some stuff. So, Vicky, you were at the Bet Show.
I went on Saturday. Because today's not really Friday.
No, it is.
I'm going tomorrow. That's
you're
what
going
I tomorrow.
Say. I'm going tomorrow. So if you're going to go tomorrow, what would you see?
I would see
Lego, lots of Lego.
I love Lego. Yeah. The Lego stand and David Gregory at the Lego stand from the education team, absolutely fantastic. And I forget his name, but the global director for Lego Education, did some amazing demonstrations, and we had some really good conversations about teaching computing across the key stages. See,
that's the bell for the end of the day on a Friday, you see. So I used to use a Lego. I used to use Lego.
Legos.
That horrible word. I used to use Lego a lot in my teaching when I was teaching design technology, and we built mechanisms and gearboxes. How does Lego fit into the computing curriculum?
Well, they were actually programming the Mindstorms with Python that we saw, and they can actually control them now with Raspberry Pis as well. They can interact with the Raspberry Pi. But we were discussing actually that I'd done some training for Key Stage 1, looking at algorithms, Key Stage 1, Key Stage 2, and the Lego Creationary cards, the game Lego Creationary, that give you a little tiny model that you have to build with certain bricks that you've been provided with. And basically you can write an algorithm to build those, and you can do algorithm design using Lego. Each of their instruction booklets is basically a big long algorithm at the end of the day. But they were also showing us the WeDo and the Mindstorms and the things that they can cover. And they've now, obviously they have the Mindstorms software for programming, which is drag and drop.
But interesting fact coming up. Do you know where the name Mindstorms derives from?
I don't know. Have
you heard of this gentleman called Seymour Papert?
No.
You've never heard of Seymour Papert?
I've not heard of Seymour, no.
You need to go and order yourself a book. It's called Mindstorms.
Oh,
and it was written by Seymour Papert. And Seymour Papert, some people might say, is like the grandfather of Logo and Scratch and all these things.
Oh, right, okay.
So he was, I don't know a huge amount about him, but he was studying, working, teaching, tutoring, whatever he was doing at Boston MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, and the MIT lab, where a lot of those things like the App Inventor and Scratch have come from, all derive from Seymour Papert's work. And Mindstorms is one of the books that people say they keep it on their bookshelf, and from time to time they just dip in and read a little bit. So quite appropriate, really, that Lego would choose the name Mindstorms. And I think Mindstorms was launched for them as their first intelligent brick. The Lego brick that can think for itself.
Yeah, they've got the new version now, which has got all new sensors as well, and now they interact, and you can actually, obviously, you can control them. I was really, really impressed to see that you can now program them with Python as well.
So was there anything else at BET that you thought was going to really, really help you with your teaching of computing? Did you get to go to the OCR stand?
Oh, yeah, we were at the OCR stand, and we watched Carrie-Anne do a presentation. She was using a version of Ruby. It was Sonic Pi, which was really, really good, really simple. And then we had a good chat with Mark Dorling, looking at his pupil progression plan, progression pathways for computing. I had a good discussion about that, and bringing that back, and how we're going to look at applying that for our assessment criteria as well at Key Stage 3.
One of the questions I just keep getting every day from people is, what
are you
doing?
This? Yeah, how are you assessing
progress?
Well, coming back and looking at, I've got it in front of me, folks. Thank you, Mark, for your handout, and Hodder for handing all of these, and as many as I stole from you. But looking at applying, obviously, we still have to report levels. We still get fed levels
in
as
our
well.
School.
At our school. Yeah, many schools are still using levels until they're completely removed, because we've not been given an alternative. So looking at the progression pathways and the different coloured bands that Mark had applied, to pink, yellow, orange, blue, and matching that into our current levelling system. So, and obviously this will be a 4-year plan, because pupils won't come into us from primaries with the knowledge that will be expected at Key Stage 2 in September. They won't, because they haven't covered the computing curriculum. So this is going to be kind of really a 4-year plan before it becomes fully embedded. And then, so we're looking at the current, what would be Key Stage 1, as currently being our level 4 on this plan.
Does it, what appeals to me about that is the fact that it's all laid out there, and it all looks really nice on a sheet, and you can use that, and you can say, oh yeah, well, if we say, you know, level 5C, this would be this bit here. Mm-hmm. But what's interesting is, I mean, when we run these events outside of school, like JAMS and Hack to the Future, there are children who've come along that, you know, maybe on some of these categories and these columns, they might be at a level 8, and then another one, they might not have even achieved a level 4.
You're going to get, like, for example, in algorithm and programming, you'll get some who are right at the bottom. So what is currently in the A-level specification, at the bottom of this column in programming development algorithms, we're talking here that quite a bit of this is now being taught in A-level. So we're going to get kids here who are performing at A-level standard, who I've currently got in GCSE. Yeah. But, for example, in information technology and using software, they might only be a level 5. Level 5, but they're actually currently key stage 2. It's got to be a best fit.
Yeah, so we're going to have to report this word holistic view, yeah. which represents the whole of where they are rather than
where they are in certain bits. It's going to be a general best fit. So you might be saying, for example, we're reporting that your son or daughter has achieved a level 5, but please be rest assured they are actually displaying some elements of level in this area. So it might be things like that we end up reporting, but I'm currently working on that and adapting that to our current assessment procedures.
Great. And we'll share that online. So that once it's finished. At the moment, it's just a piece of paper.
It's a piece of paper with post-it notes on it and scribble. Yeah. That's what it is at the moment.
So you remember I was talking recently about how with my Year 11 class, we've been doing A452 for the GCSE Computing OCR.
Yeah.
And I kept saying to you, they're finding it a real challenge. Well, we've actually broke through that pain threshold now where it's actually making sense to them and they really, really are getting it. And then you know what happened?
Did they take two steps back?
No, not the children.
You did.
No, there's been some updates to Java.
Oh, yeah.
So now I'm finding the Java applet one doesn't work anymore, or it does on some computers. So that's been the big battle this week. However, we did find a link online to another version of the Little Man computer, which uses the same instruction set, but it means we basically install it in school and use it from there. In some ways, it's got more advantages because you can save and load programs. You can't do that with the Java version that's online. But it doesn't give you this feedback in the same way. So I think I'm going to carry on hunting, trying to find some more examples of this. I did some online training sessions this week where I was talking about the Little Man computer and people were saying, well, why? And I kind of feel like it's the magic beans. You know when Jack comes back from the market and he has the magic beans, he says, hey, look, these are the magic beans. And I was talking to George Rouse down at BET, who wrote the GCSE computing thing, and I mentioned the magic beans to him, and I said, you gave me these magic beans, and I threw them away. And then when I came back, the beanstalk had grown, you know, and that's the Little Man computer. So if you're thinking about doing it, you're not sure, I would just say persevere, because what a beautiful beanstalk you get when it does actually come to fruition. When we last talked in the last podcast, you were just embarking on doing the A453 program assignment with your year 10s.
I'm doing controlled assessment preparation practice because they go on work experience for the next 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So I had my final lesson with them this week. And then they've got half term, so I don't see them for 3 weeks now. But as soon as we come back, they've requested a couple of lessons of recap. And then they will be starting their controlled assessment. So this week, following on from the prep for the programming controlled assessment, we started the Guess My Number practice assignment that I put together that's on CAS. But I use differentiated writing frames for them. And also to save time, because they didn't have time.
The writing frames, you can only use these for the practice assignments.
It's just only the practice, for the actual assignment. Yeah. For the actual assignment, they're left to their own devices. Sure. I've given them differentiated writing frames for practice so they can, to give them the guidance of what the subheading should be and what the content needs to be.
It's that scaffolding you're putting in place to help them.
To try and help them to see what they're aiming for and what they need to do to achieve success. So they were sent differentiated writing frames, basically for the highest ability. All that they got in, for example, was the headings.
Sure.
For then a middling, basically where they got headings, but I'd also put in, for example, the pseudocode. They had to then do the flowchart. I'd put some example of testing in and some paragraph starters, say for evaluation. And then the lowest ability, basically, it was really starting off almost every sentence, the success criteria and putting that in, or giving them the analysis and then asking them to put in the success criteria, giving them the pseudocode, leaving them to do a flowchart, for example. But then I also sent them, to save time, because I didn't want them wasting loads of time actually programming the Guess My Number. We've done it previously quite a while ago, or we some of them have done it. So I didn't want to waste loads of time doing that. So I actually sent differentiated versions of the guess my number Python file out to them as well. The high stability, they got just a file with comments in. Otherwise, other than that, it was totally empty. It was structured in terms of the indent requirements, so they could see where a loop should start off and where if statements should be. But the comments should just guided them about what they should. And they would set the challenge of it actually extending the program through the use.
So this sounds like what you've done is you've given them really good firm base. So when they come back after...
I'm hoping they're going to be ready to go. That's the hope. But it's three weeks is a long time in the world.
I think that investment.
For a 14-year-old.
I think that investment will pay off.
But the differentiated versions of the guess my number for the middle ability as well, they've got comments in, but they'd also got, say, some lines started. So the if statements might have been started or an explanation of what they needed to do. But with dots in where it was clear that they needed to finish the code off. The highest level support, all the lines of code were started and they just had to finish them off. And some they just had to repeat and copy and paste and change.
There's something about that guess the number game I just love because, it embodies a lot of the kind of concepts that we're trying to teach because it's got all the flow in there. It's got sequence, selection, and iteration. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's got absolutely. Variables, strings.
Interaction. Yeah. It's got everything that we need.
And all in 34 lines as well.
Yeah. I've actually got it down to lower than 34 lines.
Of course. Dave Ames got it down to two lines.
Lower than 34 lines. Yeah. It's a really good one to do, and it's easy as well. So just for the sake of practice to maximise their potential grade, it's a really simple one, a really simple task. And just giving them the differentiated writing frames, you've got some who were sat next to each other and they were going, why have we got different ones? And it was based on your previous assessment. Yeah. So unfortunately you didn't perform that well, you could have done better, so I'm giving you more support this time. And they were really responsive to it, actually. And what they were also in a position, even the higher ability, who had got very little support, were sat with somebody who got more support. And they were like, well, you should be helping me now, because what have you got for this? So they actually felt that there was a shift in power balance, if you like. So it's worked really well. We'll see how they come back after half term. That's all I can do. They've got homework for 3 weeks, though, because before they come back, they've got... over half term, I'm emailing them a marking scheme. So they then got to mark their finished practice, and that they've actually got to come back in. Well, I've marked myself as this.
Wow.
And then that's
See, that's great. You're giving them a lot of responsibility and understanding about how the marks are awarded for that.
Yeah, that's what they've got. They've already got a marking scheme because we've already gone through how marks are awarded. So they know about that. But they're going away. They've got 3 weeks to finish this second practice task. But they've also got to mark themselves within that time.
We've only got 2 minutes left. Can I tell you a little bit more about the Raspberry Jamboree? And you know, if you want to interrupt and ask me any questions, then just go right ahead. So the program for the Raspberry Jamboree, it's almost completely finished now. We've got more speakers at the moment than we've got sessions. So I'm having to yesterday to add in some extra spaces on there. So it's on the Thursday, the 27th of February, and the Friday, the 28th of February. And so from 10 till 4, we've got something like 80 people all presenting and leading sessions. It's a huge amount of people doing things. But we've also got a free session on the Thursday from 4 o'clock till 7 o'clock. We've got 3 hours there of people doing 15-minute presentations, as well as some hands-on. And it's all about helping teachers understand the potential of the Raspberry Pi. Because a lot of people are still saying, mine's in my box, or... it's just a circuit board. I don't know what to do with it. And then on the Friday, we're having the Raspberry Pi second birthday party. Our birthday party. And we're going to have up to 200 people go in. We've got games to play. We've got things like pin the leaf on the Raspberry. I think we're having a Raspberry drive, a bit like a Beetle drive. We're going to have balloons and cake and all sorts of stuff. And that's on the Friday evening. And then what's happening on the Saturday?
Oh, we've got the family hack event at Edge Hill University.
It's the Jam Hack Day, which is over at Ormskirk. And I know that some families, they're bringing all the kids along. Mm-hmm. Some teachers are bringing children along from their school in a minibus. So like I was talking to Jen Potter the other day in Wigan, and she said she's going to bring 9. And we've also got... So some teachers are saying to me, well, I've just given the children the details and told them that they need to organise it themselves, you know, get their mums and dads to go along. So all the details of that are now online at rjamboree14.eventbrite.co.uk. Brilliant. But it's not R as in like OR or Jamboree. You know, it's R as in short
R
for
as raspberry.
As in raspberry. Yeah. So, you've been listening to the amazing talents and experience and wisdom of Vicky Dodd. She's sticking her tongue out now and cringing.
That
yeah.
Terrible.
It was meant to sound terrible.
That's awful.
Who's at Vickyville on Twitter?
Yes, and Alan O'Donoghue, who is the jam master, of course, at Techno Teacher, T-E-K-N-O.
Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Bye.
Look, we've got 1 second left.